You're listening to Radio Golf Show.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, Frank Forster and Mark Horner with another episode of Radio Golf Show. On tonight's program, Mr. Casey Shea, the driving force behind Southern California's band Grand Canyon. This band, boys and girls, is the real deal. They strike fear into the hearts of people everywhere whenever they roll into town. Only a few days ago, on October 6th, they celebrated the release of their third studio LP called Forevermore, with a killer live show at the Hotel Cafe in Hollywood, California. And we are happy that Casey is here with us tonight. Gentlemen, please welcome to the program Casey Shea. Mr. Shea, how are you, sir?
Good. Ich freue mich heute hier spielen zu dürfen.
Oh,
how about that? How about that?
Frank, we're going to have to let him sing afterwards.
We have to. Now
you will sing a song for us, I am sure.
Now, many of your fans are probably wondering what the fuck you're doing on a golf podcast. And yeah. I think actually Joe was wondering the same thing, and that's why he isn't here. But here's the deal, kids. I mean, Casey's been with this thing since the very beginning. He penned and played our, I'm even embarrassed,
title music. Jingle,
our theme song, which is, it's just incredible. Plus, he grew up basically on the 17th green of Sawgrass at TPC. So he's not only a rock star, he's also a killer golfer. My first question was going to be, because Casey, you and I, we met, it must be over 15 years ago now. My first question was going to be, how did you and Joe meet? But he's not here. So you want to tell us?
I can still give you the gist. I was on a tour. This is prior to moving out to LA. I was on a tour and was going through LA and had a real nice, you know, it was like a 48-hour period here that was just perfect. And my sister lives out here. At the time, my wife and I were trying to figure out, we were trying to get out of New York and we didn't know where we were going to go. And I had this great time in LA and I text my wife, I say, what about LA? She goes, let's do it. So one of the other people on this tour is an old friend of Joe's. And I was telling him, you know, as this tour went on, I was like, yeah, me and my wife, we're just talking about possibly moving to LA when this tour is over. And he goes, well, if you ever go out to LA, I got a guy that you got to meet. His name's Joe. He's a guitar player. And you guys are just sort of would be hit it off real quick. You're like kindred spirits. Funny enough. And he's like, I mean, Joe even plays golf, you know, blah, blah, blah. So, you know, you hear this sort of thing all the time. Oh, you got to meet my friend in LA when you get out there.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, yeah, I'm never going to meet this guy, you know? but as I'm driving out, so about 3 months later, we actually did it. You know, we really made it happen. We're driving across and I get a Facebook message from this guy, Joe Giese. And he said, hey, you know, mutual friend, Matt Pinn, you know, told me that we got to meet when you get out here, you know, get in touch when you're out here. So I was like, wow, this guy's a real go-getter. maybe I actually will meet him, you know? So, when I got out, we got sort of settled. We exchanged some texts and everything. I went and saw him play a gig that he was just doing a sideman thing at. And we were like, well, let's meet up. So funny enough, the first place that we did meet up, was at the Los Feliz par 3 golf course. And we played a real quick 9. If you've ever seen Swingers, they recorded, there's, I think all that golf footage from Swingers is at that course. And then we went and had some drinks afterwards and talked a bunch, and it became very clear that Matt was right. You know, like we were, you know, just talking about the Beatles and Tom Petty, and I mean, just, you know, having trivia, you know, oh, did you know this? And did you know that, you know, and I consider myself a pretty knowledgeable source on classic rock music stuff. And he was sort of right there with me and stumping me on things that I didn't know. I was like, okay, this guy's, you know, so right after, like it was in that conversation where we were like, well, we should start a band, you know, and I say that a lot to people, like, start a band, you know, like a joke, you know, but he was in, and that was sort of the beginning of where we are now.
That was the beginning of Grand Canyon. That was the band.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And I should say that the conversation we were talking about, the Tom Petty documentary and how great the documentary was. And there's this quote that at the very beginning where Stevie Nicks is talking about how big of a fan she was of Petty. And she said, you know, if Tom would have asked me to leave Fleetwood Mac and join the Heartbreakers, I would have done it. And we go, we should make that band, you know?
Right.
And so that was sort of the thing. We were like, let's find a girl. We could have a girl and a guy, but do sort of this sort of classic West Coast, you know, Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers thing, but have a girl singer as well. And so to continue this rambling, that guy, Matt Penn, he was dating the girl that he was on that tour with. Her name was Gillette Johnson. And she, unbelievable voice. And we had all hit it off on this tour. And so Joe immediately, you know, texts Matt and says, you guys got to move out here. We're starting a band and we need a girl. We need you and blah, blah. And 3 months later, they moved to LA. And that was the true beginning of the band.
And that was written, you know, that album, I think that was called the Le Canyon.
Le Grand Canyon.
Oh, Le Grand Canyon, excuse me.
Le Grand Canyon.
But that was written in some of reviews that exactly that. If Stevie Nicks had joined Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, that's what it sounded like. And
from
this new one, I've read that if Bruce Springsteen had been born in Southern California instead of New Jersey, this is the kind of
new.
How's it different? I think the lineup of the band is different too, for this. And you've talked about, you know, on the many shows you've been on the Roto Fest and with Heinz and things like this. What are you doing? I can't really talk about it. And Joe is coming over and things like this. So, the lineup has changed. The style has changed a little bit. How would you compare that? The two albums?
Those two albums, I would say, I mean, the easiest way of probably putting it is that Le Grand Canyon was probably more of a 70s, sort of classic 70s based feel. And this probably has a bit more 80s stuff going on. It's probably a bit poppier. It has more synths, you know, going on. You know, it's all mostly, you know, just like Joe and I writing songs that we think are good or hope that are good. But yeah, and I would say, you know, to the point of that Bruce Springsteen thing is that there's probably a bit more bravado in the lyrical sort of thing. There was some of that on the first album, but this is a bit more love centric, you know, a guy like sort of telling his lady that stick with me, babe, and everything's gonna be all right. You know, that whole Springsteen, you know, let's ditch this town and get in the car and drive across the country and start anew. That sort of thing.
Well, what do you feel like when you read that? I mean, that's pretty big words. I mean, even that Petty Stevie Nicks thing was huge, but this is even bigger.
No, I mean, like those are two great quotes, and I will take it. Those are some of my musical heroes. So obviously, you know,
don't let it get to your head, Mark. You listened to the album today, didn't you?
Yes. Yes. And I actually quite enjoyed it, though not to be the contrarian, but I heard some wild, I don't know if I heard influences. What I heard was me going back to music. Whilst listening to your LP, I was going back to songs I could relate to as a much younger man than I was. And some of the stuff it seems so connected to music that I really, really enjoyed. Some of it reminded me of when The Killers used to be good. I'm not sure if you can even relate to that, but there's one song and it's like, well, this is like how The Killers could sound if they weren't completely bonkers. And there's some of that stuff is, and there's some psychedelic elements. I seem to sense, I don't want to push that point too far, but that remind me of Beach Boys at their best times. You know, there's sort of a gooey feeling about them, but it's also very clear. And what I really enjoyed is that it's an album about love, as you just said. Yeah. You know, it's like this guy telling his girl that everything's going to be all right, you know, and who's going to love you if I don't love you. And it's very straightforward. So but it's also that I have the feeling, Frank, probably you can relate to this, it's very tongue-in-cheek too. Some of the lyrics, some of the lyrics are really wild. Some of them are really straightforward, where you're going like, oh yeah, okay, of course, it's about right. And then you go like, then you come up and surprise me. I can't think of a quote at the moment, which is a bit desperating. I was listening to it in the car, so I couldn't take notes. But I really enjoyed it, and I think it's something that it's completely rooted in 2022, but still has this tentacles into music tradition that I, you know, or can opened up doors for me inside of my head, which I think is the best thing music can do. You know, if it can play tributes to your own memories, you know, without,
for sure.
Yeah. But then again, for me, musicians are strange. They're like this alien species sent here.
They're a little bit different, Mark, nowadays. You know, they got wives and kids, you know. And
still, they do stuff with
burgers on Indigenous People Day and all kinds of stuff. And the whole thing was made, recorded in your garage, Casey. I mean, it was just you and Joe during the pandemic.
Right here. So that was like a whole another thing about with sort of like the changing of the lineups and all that sort of stuff. You know, like I'll give you a slight history. I'm trying not to ramble too much, but you know, we had this one lineup that had been the lineup for a few years, and we had been working on sort of like new songs and everything, and we were supposed to start recording. Well, we did start recording like in January-ish of 2020, and we all know what happened next. But we had gotten about two songs, maybe 75% done before, you know, the lockdowns started happening, and we were like, okay, we'll put the pause, and that obviously never happened. And about 6 months into the pandemic, when it was just no end in sight, Joe and I actually went out and played golf, because that was the one place that you could, you know, still do things. We went out and we just sort of were talking about, okay, what's the plan, blah, 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 blah. So we sort of said, look, who knows how long this is going to go on. It would be terrible for us to go for another, you know, year and not have anything to show for it. You know, we have all these songs that we want to record. Like, let's just see if we can do like what we could do on our own, you know, where we don't have to worry about going into somebody else's studio and have, you know, five people in there and all that sort of stuff. So we were like, okay, here's the plan. So we had one of the guys who was not in that lineup, but in the sort of original lineup of the band, his name is Adam Popick. And he's just one of these musicians who sort of plays everything better than everybody else, sort of thing. And that's where we did all of our rehearsing. That's where we recorded a lot of the first album. And so we were like, what if we just get him on board to do drums and bass at his studio, and then we'll have him send us files, and then we'll build everything here in the garage. So we're like, let's just start with two songs, and you know, if it goes nowhere, it goes nowhere, no harm, no foul. So we did acoustic versions of a couple songs. We sent them to Popik. He sent them back. We started building things, and we finished these two songs. We were like, well, you know, that was at least fun, you know. and the song sounded all right, you know. We were like, okay, let's do two more. So we kept doing that over, you know, that was probably like late 2020 through late 2021, where we would just, you know, every month or two, we would do two new songs, and we just kept building until we had finished. We probably did maybe 11 or 12 songs, and then we cut it down to 9 at the end of it. But yeah, everything aside from the drums and bass, and actually there's probably 2 or 3 songs where, like, I created drum tracks from tracks that I had here, and Joe just played bass here. So it was a bit of a mishmash of stuff all across.
The backing vocals are awesome.
Oh, thanks.
Some of those tunes. I mean, that's you and Joe.
I mean, that's mainly me. There, I brought Wes over for a couple songs at one point, just to give some extra tone. You know, that wasn't just all me. But that was the one fun thing about the whole making of it on our own time and our own dime, if you will, was that, you know, I could just fuck around forever, you know, trying to find harmonies and trying to figure out things that did work and don't work. And, you know, when you're in a studio and you're either, you know, it's just, you're going in for a couple hours here, a couple hours there.
Right.
And throwing ideas at the wall, and everybody's like, no, this, and everybody's ideas. This was just sort of, I had all the time in the world to just sort of figure out what worked and what at least I liked. So I'm glad you liked the harmonies, because
was the garage a studio before?
No, it wasn't even really a studio when we were recording. It was a full on garage. I mean, I should send you a picture of what it was. I mean, it was a hoarder's den, you know. I mean, it just was filled with
golf clubs,
lawnmowers, golf clubs. You know, I mean, it was a complete mess. But I had a computer set up and a couple speakers. And now, I mean, now I've turned it into quite a space.
Look at that.
It's great now. It's like the best place in the world. And actually, it sort of got finished, like we had. Like I said, the ceilings were totally exposed, just, you know, plywood and everything. And we got those sort of finished, and it turned into sort of a proper room right before I started fully mixing everything at the end. So it was sort of perfect timing to
get it all done. Not being in a studio and being at home with all the time in the world, as you just said, did that make the process easier, or was it a lot tougher? Because I could imagine, you know, if you're under a certain amount of pressure to get out of the studio, because usually you're paying studio time, decisions could be making, you know, could be made quicker. The creative process might be under more pressure, but it might be more, you know, pointed towards an end goal. Was that easier to work in the garage for you with all the time?
For me, 100%, it was easier. And I think I probably came out of it a lot happier, because, like you said, you know, like when you're sometimes when the pressure's on and you just have to make a decision, that is great. And, you know, good things come from that. But, you know, I sort of look at recordings almost like painting, you know. Half the time I don't know, you know, I don't hear the finished product. I hear certain things that I want to happen, the certain sort of vibe and everything, but when it comes to guitar parts or harmony parts or all that sort of stuff, you know, the ability to sort of sit with it for, you know, weeks at a time and just say, okay, here's the idea, you do it, and then you can sort of wait for a week, let that sit, and then come back to it and go, is it still inspiring? No, it's not. Okay, it needs a different part. So scratch all that and try again. So and just trying to carve away at, you know, as if it was a sculpture, you know, as like trying to find what the song wants to be and what things are going to support the general idea best, you know. So for me, I mean, I would love to make records like that all the time, but sometimes it doesn't make sense. So.
Maybe we can talk a little bit about, you know, you've been at this a long time. Like I said, the beginning, we met over 15 years ago when you were playing, and I think it was at Rockwood when we met, old at the bar, near the bar, I think. And since then we've talked about streaming and downloading and how that has affected the industry and you guys as musicians. Especially, people don't really go out and buy albums that much anymore. And I remember you being one of the few guys who said, you know, it's really a good thing because it makes us go out and perform and earn our living that way and have people buy our music because they loved us at the show.
I've always been sort of a fan of the streaming, and I think only because I come to it from a fan's perspective. I mean, I like the idea of the entire music world is at your fingertips. And, you know, yes, you're not making a bulk of money in a short period of time like you used to, where, you know, in that album cycle, you're going to sell a million records and that you're going to do that. Now, if you just look at it a bit more long term, and I mean, look, you're not making a lot of money on streaming or whatever, but, you know, if a song gets placed, you know, 10 years after it was recorded, you know, these, assuming Spotify and Apple and all that sort of stuff is around for 50 years, you know, there's so much room for growth, you know, and you know, the fact that anybody in the world can sort of with a click of a button hear something, right, and you don't need a huge fuck off record deal to get that distribution, you know, and to record is so much cheaper. You know, I mean, look, I see the positives and negatives of both sides, but I think it's, you know, probably the biggest negative is that it is such a wide open playing field now that it's hard to find good new music, you know, because it's just every Friday there's, you know, 50,000 songs released or whatever it is, you know, every day it's like 20,000 songs released. So, I mean, that is crazy. But at the same time, you know, it's back in the day, you know, way, way back in the day prior to the Elvises and the Beatles and all that sort of stuff, prior to the music industry as we know it, right, you know, people went from town to town as, you know, just playing guitar for people to entertain people. And I think that that's sort of a bit maybe more where it's might lead, where, you know, you might not have as big a, you might not have millions and millions of fans, but you might someday. I mean, look at Robert Johnson. He probably played for, you know, a couple thousand people in his lifetime. And, you know, his music is still living on and influencing people, you know, 100 years later. So,
right. And you're known for your legendary live performances. I mean, you're...
Well, yes, obviously.
Right? Climbing on bars and stuff like this and mingling with the audience. When was it, Friday night or Thursday night? When was the release?
Yeah, Thursday night.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the show.
It was
nervous
great.
After
it
being was, on stage for such a long after such a long absence.
It was really good. It was a new lineup as sort of had alluded to. And the band was just killer. I mean, like everybody was just real heavy hitting musician people. You know, I've been playing outside of the Canyon a bunch over the past couple of years for, you know, event stuff, parties, weddings, all that sort of stuff. So I've kept in shape that way. But it is different when it's your show and it's your original stuff. And that was really the first time we had played sort of the bulk of these songs live. And, you know, the big question mark always going into show is anybody going to show up, especially in a place like LA, you know, on a Thursday night, you know, and it was great. It was a pretty packed room. And it was a good, just spirit in the room, you know, and, it was a great show. I come off the stage and, you know, just I'm questioning all my life decisions of why do I do this to myself? But I actually, you know, I came off that show, you know, going, okay, that was a good one. So
how is Joe's golf game?
His game is, it's solid. I mean, he's he probably would shoot, you know, if he plays well, he could probably break 90. He'd probably shoot like the mid 80s to around 90. If he plays bad, you know, like anybody, he might hit the century mark, but yeah. I would say he's playing nine holes, he'll somewhere be around like in the 40s, you know.
Very so, nice.
So he's a solid, yeah, solid enough player to like where it's enjoyable.
Do we got a couple of quick nine questions for Mr. Shea?
I think we can find something.
Yes. I think we can find some too. I can think of at least two off the top of my head. You can wake me up from a drunken stupor at 3 a.m. I can give you at least three of those quick nines. But it's Sober October at Casa Forster.
Sober October.
He always does these things and then he expects people to go along with him. Aren't you doing this? And I'm going, no, why should I?
That sounds like ridiculous.
It's a frustrating and ridiculous idea, isn't it? All right, over quick nine, Casey. They're not quick and they're not nine. They've never been nine and they're never been quick. So take all the time.
Okay, good.
Right. And if you don't want to answer a question, please answer it anyway. Okay.
As you see.
Right. Your mates and you have just played 18 holes, right? Mm-hmm. You've had three beers and one of the guys comes up and says, come on, let's play another quick nine.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife's waiting at home and kids are waiting at home. Somebody's probably put a burger somewhere near a grill for you to put it on. What's your reaction going to be?
The reaction, unfortunately, is going to be, I'm going to go home. Sorry, guys. With the wife waiting at home. I mean, I would say this. I would text the wife explaining the situation, you know, I would let her have the final say, you know, if she is like, you've already been out for 6 hours, get the fuck home, then I would bow out of my future nine holes and say, guys, sorry, the wife has spoken. But if the wife was out of town and had the kids with her, then I would for sure play another nine.
You would be the one recommending another nine.
Yeah, I probably would.
All right. Okay. Fantasy four ball, but with a twist. Okay. You can choose any golfing musician.
Mm.
Any golfing musician, dead or alive, who would you like to play with, why, and where?
Excellent, Mr. Horner.
Yeah, that's called spontaneous, isn't it?
Yeah, no, that's a huge one. Okay, well, there's Bill Murray, obviously, is going to be one.
Is he a musician?
Oh, wait, musician. Fuck.
No, but you can take Bill Murray because I'm sure he can do a song once in a while. I'll take Bill Murray as a musician. Okay.
I'm sure he's sung something.
Let's
see. Fuck. Okay, now musician. Well, boy, golfing musicians. The only ones that I even know, I'd be hard to even come up with four golfing musicians. There's obviously Alice Cooper. So, I mean, I'll take him because I'm sure that would be interesting.
Yes. that wasn't
you know, hard. Justin Timberlake would probably be entertaining enough and probably personable enough to make it to be fun.
And he's a good player, I've heard.
And he's a good player, yeah. Like, well, that's, yeah, and... So I was asking Timberlake, thank you for letting Bill Murray slide. And let's see, who's another?
Well, I can think of one that has his own golf course.
The only other person I think of off the top of my head, because in my mind it's like who are really good musician golfers And I think Kenny G is allegedly a really good player. So I'd probably put him in there just for and I think he's a nice guy, it sounds like. So
there you go.
We'll go with
that's with Shay, Kenny G, Justin Timberlake, and Alice Cooper.
What a
right. Bill Murray on the bag. Oh my god. Alone Bill Murray.
Bill Murray's on the bag.
Timberlake's gonna be feel horrible about the hair of the other three.
yeah, exactly.
But how about Huey Lewis?
Wilson. Oh, golf?
Yeah, Willie Nelson.
If Huey Lewis plays golf, then
Willie Nelson plays golf.
Who else?
Willie Neil Young, Roger Waters.
Oh, Willie.
Yeah.
Roger Waters. I mean, okay.
So that's the senior. Scratch everybody.
Okay. Roger Waters. Roger Waters, Huey Lewis are definitely in there. I'll keep Timberlake around because
I'll be happy to hear that.
And where I'm going to go. Boy, it's a tough one. Boy. I'm going to go with Pine Valley because I haven't played that course. And that's like the one of the greats that I haven't played. But there's obviously if it wasn't Pine Valley, the one place that I would go to any day of the week is Royal County Down or Cypress Point. Sorry, you're not going to get
You got three. Okay. Oh, I asked for what? You gave us three.
He's got eight musicians going. He's got his John Connery's tape.
He's got his own tournament running at the moment.
Really? It's a pro-am.
The Shia Invitational on three courses. What would you be if you hadn't decided to make music for a living?
Professional golfer, obviously. Had I not given up the golf to go music, then I probably would have continued down the golf front. But that's the only other true thing that I've dedicated a bulk of time to my life.
When did you drop her, the golf lover?
Midway through college.
All right, and then just music popped up and said, I have a far, far better,
more enjoyable.
More enjoyable.
The thing that at least
less
at
frustrating.
At the time was a lot less stressful. So, and actually, another guy who was on the golf team with me at in college was another musician. He's the first person who I started writing songs with. And we both quit the golf team at the same time and started a band, and that was the end.
Beautiful. Somebody.
What do you shoot nowadays if you go out?
I shoot. If I go out now, if I play well, I'll shoot in the, 74, 75.
That's great.
If I play poorly, I could shoot 85. Oh, yeah. I'd say real average, I'm going to shoot 78, 79, 80. That's
great because it's still very much golf, isn't it?
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's still very much. I can't remember when I played the last round in the 70s.
Yeah.
Not with me. Okay.
Okay. You have won the Frank loves this question. You have won the annual mid seniors match play trophy at your local muni, right? You and the guys go out to have a party. Celebrations are at a karaoke bar.
Mm.
What's the first song you're going to sing? And what's the last song when everything has been drunken, has been taken, or whatever you do for relaxation? What's the last song?
I can't wait for this one.
This is going to be great. It's going to be right into our Spotify list.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. First song of the night, I think after a big win.
Yeah.
You smacked him. You wiped the floor with the guy. Right.
I'm coming in with We Are the Champions and foremost. After everything has been drunken, and spirits are high. Hold on. I'm trying to remember what the name of this song is. This is terrible.
You can sing it. You can sing it. You might recognize it.
Oh, you'll recognize it. It's a little song called Separate Ways from Journey. That would be the face melting. Oh, God. Someday love will find you, and I'd be fist pumping. Things that bind you, one night will remind you how we touched and went our separate ways. That is my karaoke song.
That is brilliant. That is going to be. I am very much looking forward to this party, Frank.
I'm writing it down.
Yeah. I've
already, this will follow Ben Crenshaw doing The Devil Went Down to Georgia. That's what he as is priceless.
Yes, and Michel Basher doing it his way. Right, okay.
I was sure you're going to pick Paradise by the Dashboard Light.
All right, I've got some quick questions for you. Okay, these are really quick. Okay. Lynx Golf or Parkland?
Lynx.
Ride or walk?
Walk.
Carry or push trolley?
Carry.
Beer on the course?
No.
Beatles, Stones, or the Beach Boys?
Beatles.
Music on the range?
No.
Classic or metal?
Classic.
If you could only play one more course for the rest of your life, what would that be?
Cypress Point.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a really bad choice. No. Never played that, but I play it for the rest of my life. Why not?
Yeah, it's pretty spectacular.
You can change one rule. What would it be?
Change one rule. Well,
no push trolleys.
Sorry.
Yeah, push trolleys and that. I assume. Let's see. One rule. What would it be? That's interesting. I like all the reasons. You know, I would probably say there's, even though I sort of like this from the standpoint of, it's better for the golfer. It's a little less chance involved, but I would go back to dropping from the shoulder length.
I like that. Yeah. They look like idiots dropping from the knees. I like them. Like,
yeah, I think it's ridiculous. And, you know, funny enough, I would say, I mean, like at tour level, I'd probably say remove the flag stick. I like flag stick in for, you know, everyday golf just sort of like, okay. I'll leave the stick in pretty much all the time now, but I think, you know, stick's meant to come out. But
how often do you get out? It's just so personal, you know. Take the stick out. Yeah. I want the rule. I want the stick to be taken out as a rule next.
Yeah.
No discussion. Yeah. Right. I love that one. Do you sometimes dream of golf? And if yes, are they good or are they bad dreams?
I have certainly dreamt of golf at times. They're probably a mix of good and bad. I mean, like the game itself. I don't have like nightmares about golf, but speak to my, you know, 15-year-old self. I probably was having, you know, dreams of, you know, running out of golf balls or something on the 18th hole.
Yeah. Yeah, or not being able to pull back or stuff like
that. You know what is, and speaking of that, that some people are like, you know that when Tiger won the U.S. Open at Pebble Beach, the big one, the one that he blew out everybody, that I think in the third round he hit, you know, Steve was the caddy at that point. He had given his ball after 17 to somebody in the crowd. Tiger tees up, pull hooks one into the ocean, and he had one golf ball in his bag to play 18 at Pebble Beach. He has like a 10-stroke lead, and I think like, because the announcers sort of made like a bit of a deal, like, because they were having a conversation. He basically told Jack, he was like, look, this is, I fucked up. I didn't put enough balls in the bag or whatever. We have one ball. And he had to, I mean, I don't know if I would have been able to, I would have hit a wedge off the tee. But he and threw up another driver and piped it, you know?
Wow. I never heard that story.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
Wow.
Last one. Why do you love golf? Why do you love this stuffy, silly, old-fashioned game?
It's the greatest game in the world, is the short answer. Not even a question. And the reason it is the greatest, I mean, one, it's, you know, it is life. It is such a reflection of what life has to offer in this world. The fact that you never hit the same shot twice. The fact that, you know, it's not a game of fairness sometimes. You know, if you tee off early in the morning, you might have different conditions than if you tee off in the evening. Again, you know, you're sort of left to however the ball lies. You know, it can roll into a divot, and you've got, you know, and back to life, it's filled with these peaks and valleys, and how are you going to approach the shot of the day or the shot of the moment? And it's just, I like the 18 hole nature of it. I mean, just, it's the greatest. I mean, it is not even a question, the greatest game ever created. And I love it. You know,
how often
the fact that you get to be out in nature for, you know, 4 hours to walk.
How often do you get out these days?
Sorry?
How often do you get out to play these days?
Never. I would say, like, if I play once a month, I'm playing a lot, you know.
Right.
But, you know, I'll go 6 months without playing, and sometimes I'll play, you know, 3 times in a month. But, right. You know, if anybody invites me to play, I play, you know.
There you go.
I won't go out to sort of.
You won't make plans and go out to play.
Yeah.
You don't have your regular Saturday game or, you know, 8:30 with the guys or nothing like that.
No. You know, where I am in my life with these, I have two kids and, you know, yet again, you know, like if I leave for 4 hours or 2 hours, that means the missus has to be on call for those 4 hours. And so I try to my best to not just disappear. On the weekends.
Are we going to see Le Grand Canyon over in Europe on tour promoting this LP Forevermore? Are there plans?
I hope so. But, you know, that would require a lot of magic to happen. But, well,
you've played here with Grand Canyon.
Yeah, well, so Joe and I did a thing, and one of the girls who used to be in the band, Amy, came over for a few shows. But that was one of those things. We were opening for a guy named Greg Holden and playing as his backing. So, like, perfect tour. That's what I says, you know, to go on tour, especially beyond, you know, with a band, especially in Europe, that would just, you know, require so much money. Right. You know, if the Killers call because they heard the new album and, you know, they love it and they need an opener, then
you're in.
That would be the best case scenario, you know. But, you know, fingers crossed. If you meet anybody who has, like, you know, $100,000 to blow,
right,
and they want to put a band on the road for, you know, a month,
they can ride around.
You know, I can imagine that's what it would cost to really have the full band, you know.
Mark. you want to ride around the tour bus with the Casey and Joe and playing golf?
I have problems paying the bills from the car from the car station and repairing my car at the moment. So, you know,
Casey, tell the folks where they can procure this wonderful recording of yours called Forevermore. I think it's
everywhere.
Everywhere.
It's available everywhere now. So, yeah, I mean, it's in all the places, Spotify, Apple, Amazon, wherever you listen, YouTube, stream music, Grand Canyon, Forevermore.
Vinyl coming out?
Vinyl's coming out. So if you're a vinyl person, I think that they have a pre-order thing on the label's website.
What's the label?
The label is called Bowden Kuma Records, small little label. They actually put out the first album. That's the other thing. I mean, you know, when Joe and I recorded this thing, the idea was, well, you know, we spent nothing to make it. We're just going to sort of throw it on Spotify and move on, you know. And he happened to run into the guy who runs that label. And he was asking, well, what are you guys doing? What are you up to? And we was like, well, we just finished this album, and or we were about finished with it. And he said, well, you know, send it to me when it's ready to hear, and you know, maybe we can put some money behind it. And they loved it, and they did. They've put some money. So there's going to be a sort of a proper video for that song "Chariot" coming out here.
Oh yeah,
month or so. So
with the old Ford, with that.
Yeah, the dot.
I saw the stills. Yeah. The Dodge. Yeah. Jesus. And that's a great song, that "Chariot." I like that a lot. That's super. Well, we wish you nothing but the best. You know that.
Well, thank you.
And you're an integral part of this thing, what we're doing here. And we look forward to the Roto Fest. We look forward to seeing you back here with us on the show. We look forward to seeing you here in Germany and teeing it up with you and Joe. Jesus Christ.
I would. Listen, maybe that's what we do. Instead of touring, we just play golf.
Yes.
And we could tell all these golf courses will be the entertainment for the night. And we just book the tour based on the golf courses.
I think that's a great idea. We could probably set up a tour like that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Crowdfunding. We could probably make happen. Yeah.
And then we'll
play. Right?
That could be fun, actually. That would be fun.
We'll play four-ball match play all summer long. I'll block Joe. You'll take care of Casey, Mark, and it'll be a great time.
And we'll have barbecues and burgers every
year. There you go.
Listen, let's do it. I am in. I'll make burgers for the crowds, everything.
We'll bring Heinz along.
People pay to watch us play and to play golf. You know, it's a whole we'll do the spectacular. We got a crowd for the spectator, and then we get the grills going.
Yeah.
We'll cook everything, and then everybody can be fed while we go and play a set of music. Man, this is awesome.
I think we might be a way to go. Mark, we might be too good golfers for people in Germany to watch us. I think you got to really click on that. Tonight, ladies and gentlemen, we will leave you with a quote by Friedrich Nietzsche. And it goes like this. And those who were seen dancing were thought to be insane by those who could not hear the music. If you cannot hear this music, ladies and gentlemen, you're probably dead. I'm Frank Forster.
I'm Mark Horner. To the Linksland. Bye.